Okay, forget the glamour. You just want the startup part of it. And you wonder, will an MBA help you succeed? And you also are kind of curious that you've heard that Stanford is all about entrepreneurship. What's life like at Stanford? And what if you don't want to be an entrepreneur? Does it have a place for you? Or perhaps you've been accepted and are thinking of selling your car before you move to New York City or wherever you're going to be attending school. And you don't want to own a car there, or you're thinking that you want to buy a new pre-owned car in the city of your destination. I love the pre-owned euphemism. And you need to buy it after you arrive in your new town. Well, we have guests today who will address many of these questions because they are Stanford MBAs who also started the startup Carlypso, which provides car buyers and sellers with the convenience of a trade-in, but the money aspects of a private transaction. It has the potential to be a disruptive technology and new way of doing business, much like the travel sites were, or Priceline, or Zillow's, or Uber, or any of those new companies that didn't exist 10 years ago. Hello, I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. Welcome to Admission Straight Talk. Before turning to my guests, I would like to remind you that I answer your questions on the show, and I want to address one question raised on the blog by Tushar in connection with Yale SOM's essay question. The essay prompt in part reads, describe how you have positively influenced an organization as an employee, a member, or an outside constituent. And the word limit on this is 500 words max. Tushar's question on that prompt, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing a name here, Tushar's question is, it mentions influence on an organization. Does that mean that we are supposed to pick just one, i.e. the currently employing firm, or can we also write about a second experience? The answer is yes, it means just one organization, although that organization doesn't have to be your current employer. In general, the essays are an opportunity for you to explore an important experience and to answer a specific question in more depth than provided by the short answers in the application boxes or your resume. If you try to split your answer, especially if you're talking about a 500-word answer where they're asking for an organization, between more than one experience when you discuss that experience or event, or the prompt says, tell me about a time when, then you are A, not following the instructions, B, probably blowing an opportunity to show some depth and self-awareness, because you're, again, returning to the kind of short, superficial answers that are really required in the resume or the short answer questions. Now, so I advise you to take advantage of the essays and really use them for depth on one organization or one event, depending, of course, on the essay prompt. But when they say an event, an organization, tell me about a time, they mean one. Now to our two fascinating guests. Nicholas Henriksen grew up in Germany and studied at the European Business School Osterk Winkel, and while there did some semesters abroad in Australia and Chile. After graduating in 2007 with a degree in corporate finance, he worked as an investment manager in Frankfurt, co-founded a leather fashion label in 2010, and came to the U.S. to attend Stanford in 2011. He graduated the GSB in 2013 and immediately began working on Carlypso, which he co-founded with our other guest today, Chris Coleman. Chris earned his bachelor's in mechanical engineering at MIT and then worked for McKinsey for almost 2.5 years. He then moved to Coda Automotive, which designed electric cars and battery systems. In 2011, he too headed to Palo Alto for his MBA at Stanford's GSB, and in 2013, co-founded Carlypso with Nicholas. His LinkedIn summary is succinct: car enthusiast. According to TechCrunch, Carlypso presents a quote-unquote brilliant concept in the $400 billion used car sales industry in the U.S. From TechCrunch, Carlypso is poised to make a huge dent in how things are done. Carlypso is a perfect example of the kind of much-needed change that technology can help bring to a historically opaque and inefficient process. To the designers of this disruptive, brilliant concept, Nick and Chris, welcome to Admission Straight Talk. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Chris, what is Carlypso?
Yeah, so Carlypso, in a nutshell, is the best way to buy or sell a pre-owned car. We make it really easy to sell almost any vehicle, and we make it equally as easy to find a great deal on a car that you're looking to buy.
All right. Can you give us a brief overview of the process, what makes it so easy?
Yeah. So here's what makes it so easy. So in the normal process, you sort of only have two options in which you either have to run around to various dealership lots trying to get the highest trade-in offer, or you have to spend a bunch of your weekends trying to sell it to a private party. What we do to make it easy is you'll just go to our website, www.carlypso.com. You'll enter your vehicle details, and you'll get a very good idea of what your sort of instant cash price might be or what your price might be to selling it to another person. And then we'll take care of all the steps in between. So we'll either bid your car out to get the highest offer from a dealership, if you need cash immediately, or what you can do is we can actually, if your car's in good condition, we can actually take care of the entire process of selling it to another person.
And is this only available in the Bay Area, or is it nationwide, or California-wide, or?
So right now we're operating throughout California, and we've done up to 9 states, but we've only done special circumstances in our pilot programs in other states.
Okay. Nick, can you tell me how did you and Chris meet? Were you in a club together, a class together?
So Chris and I went to business school together in Stanford.
Right.
We both started in 2011 and became friends very quickly. And by the end of the second year, he and I started talking about what to do after business school. And Chris shared his enthusiasm about the used car space, or the car space in general, with me. And so we got excited and started playing around with a couple of ideas. What to potentially do in terms of starting a company. Most of these ideas were admittedly not that good. But then at some point, all our classmates approached us with the same question, how do I sell my used car? And that's when we started getting into the business of selling used cars.
And Chris, can you go into a little bit more about how you developed this idea? I mean, you mentioned it was through your classmates wanting to sell cars why did they approach you about that?
Yeah. So this, admittedly, me and Nick had a number of terrible ideas beforehand, but we had sort of gained reputation as the car guys in the class, and so people, just like you said, started coming up to us saying, "Look, you know, I just want to get your opinion. I went to go trade my near new Toyota in, and this is what they offered me." And then with some quick analysis, I said, "Well, given." You know, I can find 10 others for a different market price, and that they seem to be transacting here. We were very quickly able to say, look, you can either trade it in and get this amount, or if you sold it yourself, you'd be able to get this amount, which was inevitably much higher than the offer they had received. So sort of one by one, people came up to us saying, great, I would love to get that amount. Do you mind selling it for me? And so very quickly, we were, instead of going to all the, like, you know, the celebrations at the end of graduation, we were selling other people's cars.
And so were you doing it at that point, like, as a broker, or were you doing it as just as a favor for your friends, or?
It started out as advice more than anything else, and then it evolved into doing sort of the complete end-to-end service. And so at first we did it all very manually. So while you imagine starting a tech business in Silicon Valley as being, you know, a nice office and some computer equipment, it was me and Nick washing cars in the school parking lot, sitting in the back seat.
Okay. And you also mentioned, both of you actually, that you had some terrible ideas. How did you sift through the terrible ones to get to the one that has promise?
So here's how it started. We thought it would be a good idea to provide subprime financing for people who are interested in buying a car, but couldn't afford it, couldn't get a loan. And instead of just asking people, we actually tried to get in touch with potential customers and try to sell cars and provide loans.
Uh-huh.
But turns out that type of business is not actually a used car business. It's a business about repossessing cars. And that's nothing we wanted to get into. And hence, we skipped that idea, kept iterating until our classmates asked us with something that they really wanted and we could provide.
So you basically let the market dictate what was a good idea.
You can't do research and do a lot of thinking around what could work. you really have to do things and run experiments and get your hands dirty in order to see whether or not people are paying for the value you're providing, or whether your idea is just an idea and not actually a business.
Right, right. Now, Nick, the site, when I visited the site, it seems to focus very much on the benefits to the seller of using Carlypso, the ease, the convenience, the privacy. What are the benefits to the buyer of using Carlypso?
So we naturally started out helping a number of people sell their used cars. So the website, the portion of the website you saw is obviously focused on convincing sellers to use us instead of doing it themselves.
Right.
On the other end, if you were a buyer buying a car from us, you would definitely get a pre-inspected car. You know exactly what you're buying, and you wouldn't have to worry about anything. You basically get the same warranties and guarantees a franchise dealership would provide. That said, we quickly ran into one common problem, and that was that a lot of people didn't quite like the cars we were selling, but very similar ones that we didn't have in our inventory. So we're now at a point where we're launching a new service that helps those buyers who don't want to buy the cars that we currently have for sale still find amazing deals, all based on data that we're analyzing on a weekly basis.
I see. So you're also acting as a car finder, right?
Exactly, exactly, and we're launching that service in the next couple of weeks officially.
Oh wow! Because when you have it live, let me know, and I'll add a link in the show notes to it. Okay.
Yeah, we'd love that.
Okay,
appreciate
great.
It.
Yeah, and I think I was telling you before we went live that my I have a daughter and son-in-law living in the Bay Area, and they were looking for a specific minivan for their family. They didn't have a big budget, and they really had a very hard time finding what they were looking for. And finally, I think he turned to a car enthusiast. My son-in-law turned to a car enthusiast that he knew to help him. Maybe he paid him also. I'm not sure if it was a fee-based arrangement or not until they got a car that they're very happy with. But it would have been much easier to go the route that you're outlining, either through Carlypso itself or through the service that you're thinking of setting up. Now, let's turn away a little bit from Carlypso now and speak to your experience as MBAs. You both had excellent experience and educational credentials before starting your MBA. Looking back, do you really think you learned anything in business school? I don't mean network. I don't mean credential. I don't mean even having a good time. I mean actually the benefit and value of the classes.
Chris, what's your take on this?
Yes, undoubtedly yes. I mean, obviously, there's all the core skills which you may or may not have going in.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm not, even though I never had a formalized accounting education, I'm not sure getting another accounting class under my belt was exactly my number one priority in going to Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
But there's all sorts of other immersions in classes which you didn't even know that you didn't know, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Two striking examples about the curriculum in particular speak out to me. One is a course at Stanford called Touchy Feely.
Yeah, which is a famous course, which
I certainly got a lot out of. I think I didn't have any idea what to expect. I didn't even know it was famous before going to Stanford, to be honest. I dreaded taking it, but I learned a ton. The other one was a class taught by Andy Radcliffe, particularly about sort of growing and evolving startups. And it's not necessarily that you couldn't have read about a lot of what was there, but it's also about having the interaction and getting the live experience with a lot of times the protagonist in the case, where it becomes less of an hour exercise in achieving success than about realizing what sort of a long, hard struggle, uncertain path it was for a lot of these entrepreneurs to actually start the business, and how what propelled them to success wasn't sort of one key shifting point condensed into a case, but rather a series of things where there's not necessarily a right answer when you're starting out.
Right. Nikki, how would you answer that question? I mean, you had the business undergrad.
I would totally agree on that. So obviously I had a couple of classes at Stanford which were similar to the ones that I took in undergrad. Not very many, though. Like, I would say 80% of the classes I took, and that's the beauty about Stanford, you really have a big choice of classes to take from. were very entrepreneurship related, and entrepreneurship cannot be taught. So it's not like a blueprint. Here's how you start a company.
Right.
What you can learn is taking the right approach to running experiments with customers, getting validation, iterating on a value proposition, running more experiments until you see signs of what Andy Ratcliffe calls product market fit, which means you have a product that people really want.
Mm-hmm.
And the approach can be taught. And I got a lot out of business school, especially now looking back. I started a company before business school. I would have done a lot of things very differently with the knowledge that I gained at Stanford.
Okay. And can you give us a few examples of how you feel, your very concrete examples, specific examples of how you feel your Stanford GSB experience helped you in launching Carlypso?
So first and foremost, a number of our professors and lecturers are investors and or made introductions to other investors. So that was super helpful, obviously.
Sure.
That said, the reason why they invested was because we very much applied what we learned in class. And with that, I mean, they call it customer discovery. So what you do is you come up with a list of hypotheses. In our case, we said we can sell cars for more than what dealers are offering, and we can sell for using online classifieds. And then we actually did exactly that. So we ran these experiments, we listed the cars, we met potential buyers, we walked them through how much dealership offers were like and how we were expecting more. It turns out we validated a number of the hypotheses that we had from the get-go, and that gave us courage and confidence to keep moving forward and selling more cars and asking more sellers to take our help on selling their used cars.
That's great. That's wonderful. Now, just in, you know, Stanford has quite a reputation, both for, as an outstanding business school and as a kind of a incubator of new businesses and entrepreneurs. Though I understand that the most recent class, actually a plurality of students went into financial services, but that doesn't really change the kind of high-tech entrepreneurial reputation that Stanford has. What do you think people get wrong or simply don't get about the Stanford MBA experience and Stanford GSB?
I think one of the things that's easy to sort of over-assume is how I think people will almost overestimate the amount of like entrepreneurial activity or the amount of people who from GSB who just want to go and start a company.
Sure.
It's actually like it's a big portion, but it doesn't dominate the experience so much to where you'd feel outside if you wanted to do something else.
Okay.
When I came to school, I wanted to go work for a car company. I had no intention of starting a business. I was going to go work for a Formula One team. And so I think people overestimate like the startup drive and the opportunity to do other things. Just to the contrary, there's a lot of support and a lot of really good help if you want to go do something completely different or completely traditional. So if you want to go work at a car company, for example, there were actually tons of people I could call at General Motors who would work at other exotic sports car companies who were all hugely helpful there. To that end, too, I mean, finance is also a huge sector that a lot of students go back into. It was just really useful to learn from other people who were passionate about that, just as equally as other people were passionate about sort of the startup sector.
Nick, do you want to add anything to that, or do you have something different that you think is kind of more myth than reality?
I was just thinking back before I was admitted to business school. I had a lot of respect for business school graduates, be it from the schools on the West Coast or the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
What I learned quickly is that they're all just human beings like you and I. So we've done something well in the past and things have gone for us. So we luckily got into the school, but just the degree itself doesn't actually help you to do amazing things. It's the community encouraging you to take risks and do amazing things that helps you a lot to get started and then get a little confidence and do stuff that you didn't think you were able to do.
Okay, great. And just going back to Chris's point, I think that not this past year, I think the previous class, the class of 2013, which was your class actually, Yeah, that I think that class had a high of 18% starting a business upon graduation. But that also means that 82% got a job. You know, and I think that speaks really directly to Chris's point. I think that the number going into entrepreneurship went down slightly, actually, for the class of 2014. And the biggest group did go into financial services, if I remember correctly. I don't remember what the percentage was, though. And I guess, and to speak to your point, Nick, it's really the value and the support and encouragement of the community that you feel is something people don't fully realize. Is that correct?
Well, I think you've got two different characters going into school from the beginning. You've got the people who like finance and really like consulting, and for them it's a developmental experience, and it definitely is a personal journey. Everybody says it, but it really is. And then they leave business school being happier people and doing the same type of job, but maybe better or with more courage than they used to do before.
Right.
And then there's others, and I want to count myself as one of those people, who really want to do something entrepreneurial, who sought an opportunity to go to the Valley, understand the ecosystem and start a company, and if you really want it, it'll work out for you really well.
Okay. Now, I noticed that Carlypso received initial funding from Y Combinator. Did Stanford, GSB, or your MBA experience help you get that initial round of funding? And I think, Nick, you actually alluded to the fact that it did, but can you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, so when Chris and I decided to experiment and help our classmates sell their used cars, I had a coffee chat with Andy Ratcliffe and told him about what we were doing. Andy Ratcliffe was the founder of Benchmark Capital and Wealthfront and a lecturer at the GSB.
Mm-hmm.
And when he listened to what I was telling him, I was actually asking him for career advice, but he said, well, you already made your decision. You want to sell cars. Now let's figure out how to make this a company, and if you want to make this happen, you've got $50,000 seed funding from me if you want to.
Oh, my goodness.
And that was. Then I called Chris and told him, hey, we have a problem. Andy Reckler invests, and he encourages us to ask other professors too. So we raised our seed round from lecturers and
that's a great story.
Professors at GSB. Yeah, it was amazing. Andy's amazing. And that certainly helped. GSB and Y Combinator are two different things.
Right.
Y Combinator doesn't actually look at your credentials that much. What they look at is, do you get your hands dirty? Do you run a lot of experiments? Do you make a lot of progress? And do you know your customers?
Uh-huh. Well, that's valuable. And Chris, other than the story Nick just told, do you have a, do you feel, I mean, that story is pretty amazing, pretty much answered the question, period, but do you feel that in other ways, perhaps MBA experience helped you get initial round of funding? But I guess if you were learning how to run those experiments, how to approach a market, then that is part of what Y Combinator, what your professor rewarded you for, and also what Y Combinator rewarded you for.
Yeah, I think that's certainly the case. The one sort of counterintuitive part is I don't think Y Combinator normally looks highly upon sort of traditional MBA experience
either,
in terms of, like, you sort of have to walk the walk more so than just having credentials or having some other sort of vague idea. For Y Combinator, it's all about getting your hands dirty, which obviously is very much emphasized at Stanford, which was helpful. But by no means did we go into the interview just saying, hey, look, we're from Stanford Business School. We'd like to tell you about our idea.
Got it.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Arrogance doesn't get you very far, does it?
Right.
No.
Most of the time, no.
No, no. Now, I'm positive there are people listening to this podcast who would love to attend Stanford GSB and or go the startup route. What advice, you know, again, as you correctly pointed out, most people at GSB are not going the startup route, but there are many people who definitely want to get into Stanford GSB. What advice do you have for the college student or recent college grad who wants to go to get a Stanford MBA? And they're not ready to apply yet. They're thinking a few years ahead. What would you suggest to them?
The main thing you can do, I think, and I think that's true in life as much as for a future application for a business school like Stanford, just be authentic, be yourself, and don't try to force it. If if you know what you want and or what you enjoy doing, and if you're good at it, then Stanford will definitely take you. If you're trying to construct a resume that might work because you have all the right brand names in there, and you're not authentic to what you're doing, I'm pretty sure that Derek Bolton will find out, and it's not going to happen.
But you'll sound like you'll be just like all the other people doing that.
Essentially, yes. Yeah.
Right. Chris, do you have anything to add about advice to the recent college grad or young professional?
No, I think Nikki and I answer this the same way, right? Like, be authentic to yourself and be really, really sort of uncompromising in knowing what you want to do and furthering your path to get there. So, you know, if that means you're into selling used cars, for example, then go after it.
If it
means you're really adamant and there's so many people like this who are just so passionate about finance that they want to get better and better at it, then that tends to shine through beyond any artificial credential building.
That's true. Absolutely true. What do you think are the key qualities or skills that wannabe entrepreneurs need to develop if they are to succeed as entrepreneurs? This is for both of you.
You'll fail a lot.
Yeah. What did you say, Nick?
You'll fail a lot.
Don't be a fail. They're afraid of hurting your nose when you fall on your face.
Yeah, because you will much more often than you could ever imagine. You need to be willing to make mistakes and get your hands dirty to learn from your customers. Their true customers are dead honest. They'll tell you things they like. They'll tell you even more things they didn't like. And instead of ignoring the stuff that you don't want to hear, that's the part where you learn most.
True.
Starting companies is all about finding out what you don't know that you don't know, and then learn and try to provide a compelling value to someone who's willing to pay for it, and then it should take care of itself.
Sounds great. Chris, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think very much along the same point. As I would say, it's totally okay to apologize for things that you've messed up. Just try not to make the same apology twice. Right? Like, learn from the first one.
Isn't that, so I think it was Henry Ford who said, the only mistake is an error that you didn't learn from. Something like that. The only true mistake is one you didn't learn from.
Yeah.
I think it was Henry Ford.
There's too many things that aren't known that you're going to have to screw it up a number of times, not even knowing that you were going to screw it up, obviously.
Right. You don't aim to screw it up the first time. It just kind of happened. right. That's for sure. And I think another part of it is just being willing to take responsibility for what's happened in your future, you know, another part of it. I think that's a critical part of being an entrepreneur. But in any case, Nick and Chris, this has been wonderful. I've really enjoyed talking to you. More and more MBAs and more young professionals and non-MBA graduate students do want to go the entrepreneurial route, though you're 100% right that for those who want to go more traditional paths, that's fine too. Regardless, I want to thank you so much for giving up your time and sharing your perspective on the MBA, Carlypso, Stanford GSB, and the value of the MBA to entrepreneurs. Where can listeners learn more about Carlypso?
You can go right to our site at www.carlypso.com,
okay.
Or you can email us at support@carlypso.com.
Okay, sounds good. And I'll throw links to the show notes in the show notes at info.exip.com/88 to Carlypso, to the TechCrunch article that I quoted initially, and I'll also and to the question I responded to at the beginning of the podcast, I'll also throw a link into that. And when Chris and Nick, when you have the link to your new service, please do send it on over. And I'm not sure, it may be up before this recording goes live, because it probably won't go up for a couple of weeks, but whenever, we'll add it to the show notes.
Cool. And thanks so much.
You're welcome. And the show notes again will be at info.exip.com/88. Listener, thank you too for tuning in to this, our 88th episode. If you found this episode helpful, I have a favor to ask. Please share your perspective on iTunes. There's a link to our iTunes page where you can leave a review on the show notes. And if you have a question you would like me to address or you just want to comment on the show, please do so in a comment at info.accepted.com/88 or by sending an email to questions@accepted.com. Finally, if you're not yet a subscriber, you can subscribe either through iTunes, Stitcher, or Zoom. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.